T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
You're listening to KJ and Don Darrow on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
Yeah, that's what you play right there when the U.S. Open is in your backyard. The second hour, KJ and Don Darrow flying like eagles. Wouldn't you love to see an eagle today, Mark, out at the U.S. Open? Wouldn't you love to see it? The screams?
I'd love to see it. Yeah, I'd love to see it, especially from one of the guys contending. That'd be awesome. Keegan Bradley wants to throw in an eagle. That'd be, I'm sure the fans here would roar.
I've actually been to a PGA event where an eagle was scored. It was a long time ago. I think it was Davis Love III. The scream was like you thought you were inside of an arena.
Yeah, I don't know how many eagles have been made during this Open. It's a tough course, and it's played tough. I got to look that up.
So here are the odds going in, according to BetMGM. Matt Fitzpatrick is the leader at 333. Will Zalatoris at plus 350. John Rahm plus 400. Scottie Scheffler at 600. Rory McIlroy plus 1,000. Keegan Bradley plus 1,400. Adam Hadwin plus 2,200. And Dustin Johnson plus 15,000. I just had to throw a Liv Goff right there. So, Mark, I know the excitement. You probably just wanted to, like, I have my club with me.
I want to play. Like that. It's part of the problem here. I want to go out and just start teeing it up.
You got your 7 iron with you. Let me just take give him one solid shot.
Yeah.
But is what is it that's been different for you at this tournament when you've been to others in the past?
Well, it's a major championship, obviously. So I just haven't felt the reaction to the venue like I have and like I've seen with this one. Like, obviously, you know, they bring in, it's a different situation, it's not really fair, but they used to go to TPC Boston for, it was the Deutsche Bank and then the Dell Championship and then the Northern, whatever. You just, the buzz there, even though the field, it was a great field of golfers because it was part of the FedEx Cup playoffs, it just didn't catch the buzz and the energy around the tournament, obviously wasn't the same. You've got this venue, a historic venue, one of the best in golf, and you've got the history with Francis we met, and he won the 1913 Open as an amateur or whatever, and now you've got how it's been playing, and everybody, like I said, you just love the numbers, -4, -3, like that's what a U.S. Open is supposed to be.
You still have a t-shirt from that 1913 amateur.
I got to find one. Here probably has one. There's a lot of the membership here really is into the whole, like, Francis we met thing. They bought his house. Like, his house, he grew up, like, right off, you don't know the story, he grew up, like, right off of the 17th hole across the street or something, walked over and won the Open. It's the people and the players and the people covering the event have loved the country club. Obviously, like, no offense, I'm biased, but like, you come to Boston, like, what's there not to love? You got passionate fans. The city is one of the greatest sports cities in the world. Like, you should love coming here if you're the golf world,
everything
the PGA
you want,
Tour.
Yeah, everything you would want from a golf audience is here, right? It's, you know, I mean, the mint juleps are cool down in Augusta, but here, you know, come on, Rory. You know, like, so you're going to get the real Bostonian feel. And there's an added, you know, caveat that you get to roll over to Brookline and just kind of just be, you know, be you, right? So,
and this, like, I agree, again, bias, but this course should be a part of the whatever the regular U.S. Open rotation is with Pebble Beach, and like, it's a historic venue. They've hosted Ryder Cups. Like, it's a great sports town. You should put it, you know, especially the condition, the way the greens, the way they're rolling, you know, it's not, we remember 2015 at Chambers Bay, U.S. Open, everybody was complaining about the greens. It wasn't in great condition. That is not the case here. great condition, tough test, scoreable holes, but a tough test, and everything the U.S. Open should be. They should come back here routinely, every few years, every 7, 6, 5, whatever it is. Bring it back. Keep coming back and keep having media day events.
Yeah, well, I think so as well, because if as big of a sports town Boston is, if you're a major championship, you would want to be part of that energy, part of that financial fan base, right? There's a better disposable income in Boston than some other places. So you'd want to be able to have those things in place. And plus, of course, with the news with LIV Golf, and which it doesn't play into so much a factor today. Dustin Johnson is the closest that's part of that and that's making a run, is that you want to be able to shore up great places with great energy to sell to a national audience. And so Boston's always going to give you a show. Put a camera in front of us, you won't get disappointed. So,
for example, nothing against Oakmont, and I've never been there, but yeah. Oakmont is part of the rotation. Oakmont, Pennsylvania, 2025, 2033, 2042. Please, get the country club into that rotation. Oakmont, right. They're great courses, and nothing against those courses.
They put Bethpage in there.
Bethpage is not a part of the regular rotation, okay. According to the, I don't see it on here in the foreseeable future. But
that
it has
might be the debate they have.
When did they play there last? 2019? No, yeah. I forget. It was recently they were there, and they played in 2002.
It was a replacement one. They used it as a replacement not too long ago.
The ones that have multiple, obviously Pebble Beach, there's multiple dates. There's Oakmont, Pinehurst down in where near North Carolina. Yep. Oakland Hills in Michigan has a couple dates on the books. You got to get another one on here for the country club.
I totally agree. All right, so who is your dark horse, right? Out of the ones that I gave you the favorites, who do you see making a run from, say, within 3 to 4 shots?
A dark horse?
Yes.
It's tough.
It just goes absolutely out of face today. Can possibly make up 3, 4 shots.
Okay, if I had to say a dark horse, he's a little bit outside of that. I go with Gary Woodland, I guess. I mean, he's a guy that's won a U.S. Open, won at Pebble Beach. He's 5 shots back, but you never know how this course. You never know how this course could play. If he has a good day, and some of the there's a lot of people in front of him, but he could, if he had a great day. And some guys faltered, which they will. He could find himself sort of in contention on the back nine, and you never know if you're looking for a dark horse. Yeah. I'm just not going to pick some guy I've never heard of, dark horse.
Right.
McIlroy, is he really a dark horse?
I'm talking about not so much in terms of, it could be a nameless or a named person, just in terms of who could you see making an absolute crazy run today to get themselves within a shot, say with 3 holes remaining.
McIlroy, the thing that worries me is off the tee, he hasn't been great. The putter was on fire yesterday. Okay. And same with Rahm. The putter was on fire. So that's good. But off the tee, I don't know if I can trust him, especially if there's wind and stuff and elements. So I don't know if I'm comfortable saying, if Scheffler can be put into that category. He had a bad back nine or whatever it was. He faltered, but I think he could. He's only 2 back. It's a tough dark horse is a tough thing to categorize when you have some of those big names up there. But I think it's wide open. That's the best part. Yeah. Anybody could fall off. Anybody could make a run. All those guys that are even or above are in contention.
Yeah. So Hardy. So you're really talking about 10 guys are even or above. So Hardy and they all tee off starting at 2:00, 2:01. Hardy's tee time is at 2:01. He's paired with Dahman, and then Burns and McIlroy are paired together at 2:12, and then Hadwin and Scheffler at 2:23, and then Bradley and Rahm at 2:34, and then Zalatoris and Fitzpatrick at 2:45. It's KJ and Don Darrow on WEEI. Mark is live from the U.S. Open. Happy Father's Day. Mark, you love to play golf. I love to play golf as well. For Father's Day, is this better than you actually being on the course for you?
No. No, I always pick playing golf if I can play. If I'm playing at some local muni, I'd probably rather be at the U.S. Open. But if you're going to give me a round at an awesome venue or something like that, I'd probably rather do that than just watch. Because if I watch the golf, it's enjoyable, but then all I want to do is play, and I get frustrated that I can't play, and it's just it's a weird dynamic. But I enjoy being here, obviously, because that's not an option today, but I always pick playing.
Did you put your clubs in the car today?
They're always in the car. They never leave the car. Yes.
617 779-7937. Text line 37937. It's KJ and Don Darrow, Mark, live from the Country Club, getting ready for the final round. Any disappointments to you so far? We talked about Phil's kind of, I don't want to say on purpose, because that implies in a professional event someone has just skated. But I just don't think he had the desire to. When you don't even try, when you're plus 11 when it comes to cut time, like, that says to me, you're like, yeah, I don't want, I'm out of here. I would venture to say he left town probably before he got off the 18th, you know? And so is there a storyline that's out there for you right now that can help the PGA with its narrative that they've been battling now here for the last 2-3 weeks with Liv?
A storyline that they've been battling with Liv?
Yeah, in terms of today. Is there a storyline?
I don't see much of a storyline with Liv. No, other than the fact that everything surrounding this tournament and the conversation, it just makes the Liv thing feel awkward. Like I said, it just feels like an exhibition, and these guys are here, and the vibe I catch is that it just feels awkward. You talk about, especially with all the history around this place and the game and the Francis we met and all the history associated with the different tournaments on the PGA Tour, you sort of feel the history and you embrace it, and it's part of the prestige of winning a tournament like this. Then you think about the Liv thing, and it's like, oh yeah, it's like a money grab exhibition.
Imagine if Dustin Johnson was sitting two shots off the lead, right? I mean, he's a bit out, but he's not that far out. But let's say he's two shots off the lead. You almost feel like the conversation becomes a little different, maybe from the press, do you think?
Maybe. I'd be actually interested to see what that conversation would become if he was in contention and if they had to start raving about, like, most of the media that I've heard, I'm sure not everybody, but most of the media, it's been more of a negative vibe I've gotten about that Liv golf thing. So I don't know if they had to start praising the play of one of the Liv guys, what that would sound like. I'd be interested to know, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be the case. So, but I think that's the biggest thing. You feel the prestige associated with this tournament, this venue, all of the above. And that is something that just absolutely does not exist with this Liv thing. I mean, they're coming here in September. They're going to the International. Like, nothing against the International, but that's just not the type of venue that this is. Obviously, this is a major championship. They're going to have a lot of work to do. Obviously, time will have to be a part of that. If they're ever going to create some sort of history, I don't even know if it's going to get to that. The history is a part of this game. The golfers have talked about it. McIlroy talked about it. Rahm talked about it earlier in the week during the media sessions. That's not a part of what Liv Golf is. You can make a lot of money, but there's no history. There's no prestige. There's nothing like that. It's all on display today. That's why I'm excited. Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
We could get a guy from Golf Digest to join us, but he's got a hard out at 10:25. Can we hit a break early?
Well, we're due for one now.
So all right, let's go to break now. Let me just tell you real quick, though, before we go to break, that this U.S. Open coverage here from the Country Club is brought to you by Meiomi, the official wine of the PGA Tour, and by Zingaroo. Zingaroo allows you to trade, chat, and compete with friends all in one app. Join now and get started with $25 on us.
KJ and Don Darrow, Mark live from the U.S. Open. 617-779-7937. It's WEEI, but right now it's time to trend with Nick.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning.
MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field. It's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
KJ and Don Darrow on WEEI. WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
KJ and Don Darrow, happy Father's Day to you. And thanks for starting your Sunday with us. KJ here, along with Mark, live at the U.S. Open. Happy Father's Day, Mark.
Happy Father's Day, KJ. We are joined now live by Dan Rappaport of Golf Digest, a writer for Golf Digest. Dan's got a few minutes for us. Dan, thanks very much for joining us here on KJ and Don Darrow. Just let me start with this. What has been the vibe that you've caught about the country club and how it's stacked up in terms of being a U.S. Open venue?
Yeah, I don't think you could really ask for much more. I think the combination of the history, the golf course itself, the fan support from the Boston fans, there's been a buzz on the ground all week. And I think the success of the leaderboard as far as big name after big name after big storyline is just added to it. So I haven't been this excited for a final round in a little while. And I think the country club has shown out big time.
If there's a guy that you could look towards in terms of who you like today, I know there's a lot of big names on there, you know, in a different style of how we got to today. John Rahm, Rory, their putter was hot yesterday, but they weren't great off the tee. Is there somebody in terms of, I guess, a favorite coming into today that you would look towards?
Yeah, I think Scheffler. I got my eye on Scheffler. I know he had quite the wobble yesterday in the middle of the round, but I think birdieing 17 and parring 18, especially with that par par on 18 with like 15 or 20 feet, was massive for him to just be two back. I think it's going to be, you know, it's windy today and it's cold, so you're going to have to hit it low sometimes and you're going to have to hit it high sometimes. I think Scotty's really good at varying trajectory. Obviously, a ton of confidence this year from all that he's accomplished. So Scheffler is going to, I know he's two back, but it's a U.S. Open and that can evaporate so easily. So I think I have a hard time imagining that Scheffler's not going to be right there with a chance at the end.
Dan, thanks so much for hanging out, and KJ and Don Darrow. So tell me, how important do you think the narrative is for the PGA for Rory to be in the conversation going into the last hour of the final round?
Yeah, not just Rory, right? But, you know, John Rahm is another one who's been kind of part of that pro PGA faction, PGA Tour faction. Scotty Scheffler is another one who's been pretty unwavering in his support for the PGA Tour, Will Zalatoris as well. So it's a show of force, right? It's a message to the golf world that, you know, these are the best players in the world. These are the tournaments that people want to watch, and this is where they play. So, yeah, I think having those guys up near the top would definitely make Commissioner Jay Monahan smile.
Dan Rappaport of Golf Digest joining us here on KJ and Dondero. Dan, I got to get one live golf question in there. I know it was a big part of the narrative, but just from your perspective, because I'm interested, do you ever see a situation where some of these live golf guys, for whatever reason, get shut out of the majors as we progress forward months, years ahead?
It's possible, but probably not in the way that you're thinking. I don't think they would do like a blanket ban. I think it would be if the official world ranking declines to give them ranking points, and then these guys would just see their ranking kind of slowly tumble lower and lower to the point where they're not getting invited. So I don't think they would ban them outright just based on where they play. But I could see them making it really hard for them to qualify, if that makes sense.
Okay. A couple more just for me. Is there one guy, you told me who you sort of like, is there one guy that you feel like needs this major more than all the others at the top of the leaderboard going into the final round?
Need is kind of a tricky word.
Sure.
You know, I think Zalatoris has been there a bunch of times. And so I think he would love to get one out. And so he doesn't have to answer the question anymore about, you know, when are you going to win your first? When are you going to win your first major? He's carried himself with confidence all week. He always does that, though. And he's putting really, really well. The greens are so small that it's hard to three-putt these ones. So, you know, we'll see. I think he's such a good ball striker that he's going to give himself a chance. It's just a matter of whether the putter holds up.
And final question, Dan. I know you were mentioning to me that you have some family in town. I know I read an article. Your relationship goes back with Matt Fitzpatrick into college. If Fitzpatrick is able to hold on and win his first major today, could tonight be like the best night of your life?
I was just telling my fiance that exact thing, and she was like, "Oh, don't get ahead of yourself. Don't get ahead of yourself." I was like, "No, we're gonna be slugging tequila out of the U.S. Open Trophy tonight. So just prepare yourself."
Excellent. Boston's a great town.
I mean,
for that.
it's second consecutive major where he's had a chance. So. Just hope he plays better than the first one.
And Vegas has him winning it at +333, so that might ease your mind there that people are actually going to put money on him winning it. So, like,
well, it could be Matt Fitzpatrick could become the third person, Julie Inkster, Jack Nicklaus, who won the U.S. Open and the U.S. Am at the same venue. We'll see if that happens. Dan, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck today.
Yep, no worries. Thanks, guys.
Dan Rappaport of Golf Digest joining us here. And, yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of storylines like that. It's just, you know,
It's good for the PGA.
It's good for golf. Like, it's good because just the whole sport of golf has come under a cloud recently. But the PGA Tour, sure, these are PGA Tour guys.
Yeah,
like I'm rooting for I'm not rooting for the LIV guys per se. I like the PGA Tour, and I think that's, you know, better than an exhibition like I just outlined the LIV golf to be. So. I hope it's a big name that wins. There's some big names. I just hope it's drama-filled. All the things you want. I don't want somebody to run away with it necessarily. I want drama. I want big names. I want epic shots. I want all those things for this venue and for this day.
Yeah, well, you got 10 guys right there within four of the lead. So you literally have a reason to watch right as the national coverage hits. So, again, sometimes you can't plan these things. I think it would be kind of like a ho-hum if someone was, you know, five ahead between themselves and the number two guy. So you have things in place. You have players in place. You have names in place. You have a storyline in place. Sometimes you can walk into disasters and they become like the flowers bloom from them, right? So this could be the best weekend that the PGA could have expected, especially with the narrative that was going into the U.S. Open. Now, I don't want to say I can't call you an anti-LIV guy. You're not an anti-LIV guy, are you?
Kind of. The field, I mean, who's in the field? You know, what is it? I'll watch golf, really, any golf that's on, I'll watch it. But I like to see the best players playing against the best players. Yeah, and get that more often if they're all on the PGA Tour.
Right, and then you might have players who say, you know what, I just need to be compensated to be here. And over time, like, this might be just the first run. Does LIV exist in 4 years? I'd probably say no, right? But if it does, now you may have a real problem on your hands because better golfers will be coming, and there's nothing that you really be able to do about it unless you start to match the money. And I think matching the money is going to be the narrative down the line, like, is the USGA stepped up? Will the PGA step up? Will they allow players to suddenly be able to have their name and likeness? So I think that's going to be part of the conversation moving down the line, that I think some of the players are saying, hey, look, a college player can have their name and likeness, and here I am a pro on the PGA Tour and can't necessarily do that. So it's going to be interesting because the money is going to come into play whether we want it to or not, despite how or who are the best players in the field.
So we've talked a lot about some of the changes associated with golf. If we can, I'd like to transition to the changes that may or may not need to happen for the Boston Celtics, because I have one that I wanted to throw at you, okay? Because I've been thinking about this. This was brought up earlier a few months back, and now it's kind of come to the surface after the finals. What would you say to me if I proposed to you some sort of package that included trading Marcus Smart for Lonzo Ball?
Trading Marcus Smart, yes. Lonzo Ball, no.
Why?
Because I still would worry about him hitting an independent shot. I mean, he's a distributor. That's great. But the Celtics need a third scorer, and Lonzo Ball's not your third scorer.
See,
let me tell you why I do agree with it. When you bump Marcus Smart from the 8 to the 20 that he's getting now, you now put him in a category where you can get a quality $20 million player. So, yes, I think you make that move on a quality $20 million point guard, maybe a Brogdon, maybe a De'Aaron Fox you look at.
Brogdon has to stay healthy. Ball has to stay healthy.
Yeah, and I would be more concerned about Ball's health only because he still hasn't come back from what he's last been out for, right? So you haven't been able to see a rem of play, because you would want Ball at the beginning of the season and not be some mid-season transaction. You'd want to see what kind of body of work he still has. So I could say, so yes to trading Marcus Smart, not so much for Lonzo Ball.
I would do it for Ball. I would do it for Lonzo Ball. I think he brings you what you need. Listen, Mark, I love Marcus Smart. I love what he brings to the Celtics and the tenacity, and Steve Kerr talking before the finals that he was sort of the guard version of Draymond Green. Whether or not I agree with that fully, that can be debated. But it's sort of, I get what he's saying, and I love what he brings to the team. But we just saw, he brought that to the team in the finals during these playoffs, and they couldn't win because they turned the ball over incessantly. So you bring in a guy that is able to stabilize that. Because look, it's not Marcus Smart's fault that Jaylen Brown fumbled every other time he went into the lane, that Jason Tatum
had that could be a hamstring. Yeah.
But I'm just saying the point guard is the one who's responsible for creating a culture of limited turnovers. That's your primary job. You're the floor general. You take care of the ball. And Smart, for better or worse, was unable to create that culture. Good. He wasn't able to do it well enough. So I want a guy that if you can get, you don't just give Smart away, but if you could get a guy like Ball that sees the floor, that we'd have to look at, you know, different statistics associated with turnovers. But if you like what you see, he doesn't turn the ball over, he takes care of it, he's able to distribute, he doesn't take,
but he,
you
know, still has to take a shot.
And yeah, but he can take a shot. He's made shots. Like, he's not a useless shooter. He's not early. I mean, you're talking about, and how good of a shot maker was early Rondo? Like, Rondo couldn't hit shots. He had a ton of talent around him. But, like, Lonzo Ball is not early
the
Rondo.
The team was totally – that's a totally different constructed team right there with Rondo there. With Rondo, it's almost kind of like, you know, you just give them the ball. But when you're talking about bringing in Lonzo Ball, when you're saying give them the ball, you're talking about Brown and Tatum, and those are just two guys. You know, you had – you know, Rondo's giving the ball to Ray Allen. He's giving it to Paul Pierce. He's giving it to Kevin Garnett. You literally have every level on the floor that it potentially could be argued the best at what they do for dishing for Rondo. Where with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, I see duplication, right? Even though one is almost six nine, the other's about 6'6", 6'7", there's a form of duplication in their play outside wing, where you're not talking about a power forward that's going to dominate the paint and Tatum. So you're going to need that point guard to be a shorter. Now, to Marcus Smart, I think he was a guy who got smart and tried to develop his offense under the radar and stop taking threes to try and make the excuse or make the point for him being the point guard. But he's really a bench. He's a first bench guy, right? Like, in the construct of this team, you would say Marcus Smart, at least you know you'll get some form of scoring and great defense coming off the bench with him. And I just don't know if Marcus Smart would want to be in that position of being where he best serves the team, is coming off the bench the way it's constructed now. So trading Marcus Smart, yes, I'm just not sold on Lonzo Ball.
Okay, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Because we asked Mego this when she joined us. Was that 2 weeks ago now?
No, that was that 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think it was two weeks ago when she was out in San Francisco.
For game one.
There was some rumblings, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but there were some rumblings that during that fourth quarter run, when the Celtics had that epic comeback in game one, that Smart wasn't necessarily as engaged on the bench when Derek White was unconscious and he was hitting shots. And she said, and I don't think she was necessarily wrong, but she dismissed it, that Smart might have been a little bit he might have had an attitude. Like, she dismissed that because he came into the game and then hit some shots himself down the stretch. But the Celtics did go on after that scenario played out to lose four of the next five.
Right.
Do you think that factored in at all? Was there a little something going on, or is that just, you know, something we don't even need to worry about or think about or talk about?
Well, when you're a defensive player and the knock on you has been your offense, when you see someone else coming in providing the offense, you're going to feel like you could have done that, right? And then when given the chance to do that, like you said, over the next five games and not do it. Again, Marcus Smart won Defensive Player of the Year. But what's best needed is an offensive point guard, right? Now, you've gone through it with Kemba, that didn't work. Kyrie didn't work. And so the Celtics are kind of back in this situation where it's kind of like, do you go and go get somebody young? And that's why I would understand the Lonzo Ball argument, because there's still mileage on that, on those tires. I'm just worried about, like, are you dealing with summer tires in the winter? And or versus going the veteran route, which you've seen where Kemba, where he just fell apart as soon as he got here, and Kyrie just didn't want to be here. So, you know, that's going to be the quandary, where you don't want to put the Celtics team back in a situation where there's this veteran point guard that can suck up a lot of air and energy in the room. and go back to square one with this team. So I can see some element of Marcus Smart being disappointed that, hey, look, Derek White came in here and lit
things on
fire.
But you don't think it derailed them?
Well, no, because there's so many. Every game has its like its own storyline in the playoffs. But I think things can carry over. I think if you see someone who's going to be the hero, you may feel like you need to show that you have a cape too.
Yeah,
and Marcus, you know, sometimes shows like look. I think what was still on Marcus Smart's mind was what almost happened in the Eastern Conference Game 7 against Miami, where he almost single-handedly gave Miami that series and a trip to the finals again. And so Marcus Smart, I'm sure, is probably already working on his offense right now because these conversations are being had.
Look, I think you'll appreciate this conversation because you've been getting mad that people in Boston have been negative about Jason Tatum's performance. But what we should be saying, I mean, you can't ignore what he did. It has to be discussed. It was so stunning that a first-team All-NBA guy could sort of trail off and tail off the way he did. But
fizz out. Listen, impossible.
But ultimately, this was a really good run for them. They took significant steps season. And you can't be anything but elated with what they were able to do, getting over the hump. Ime Udoka was an absolute hit. I thought he had a bad finals, but he was a hit as a head coach. And this team is going to be better off for it, having him around. I think Rob Williams has emerged as a star. What he did in the finals, he was probably your most impressive player in the finals.
Yeah.
What he did... That guy's going to be an all-star, and I think in part that's what makes Marcus Smart sort of dispensable, because he is Rob Williams is going to be a defensive player of the year type of guy. I don't know if he'll win it, but you can replace Smart and sell high after having him won the award, because you've got a guy that can, you know, infuse your team with that toughness, that culture, that defensive presence that every good team needs, that with Draymond Green for years has given Golden State. So Williams can be that guy. Yeah. You know, I'd like him to become a little bit better rebounder, maybe put on a little weight. I'm worried about his injury. Like, all those things exist, but he's a guy that you can roll with. And what he did in the finals, the toughness, playing through the pain, and the production, that guy is going to be a star. You got Brown, you got Tatum, you got Williams, you're going places. And this team, we should be excited. Ultimately, I know it hurts, and losing three straight, that was a disappointment. But we should be excited about what they did. Excited. That was awesome. And that was a huge turnaround.
Well, even to make more of your point about how Williams has now become indispensable, is just have to look at the Eastern Conference. Durant, Embiid, Giannis. These are guys that Rob Williams can match up against, where it's not really a guard-dominant Eastern Conference the way the Western Conference is. So Marcus Smart may have more value in the Western Conference to defend your Stephs, defend your Clays, defend your Jordan Pools, defend your Ja Morants, your Donovan Mitchells if he decides to stay in Utah. What's your guy's name in Dallas? Luka.
Dirk. Right. Did I say Dirk?
Right. I get Luka. It, right? Right. It almost feels the same, right?
The Adam Sandler movie Dirk was in it.
So you literally have a value situation set up for Marcus Smart, where maybe you get a guard like Reggie Jackson, who I kind of opined for around the trade deadline, where, hey, look, the guy can distribute but can also give you buckets and not get in the way of what your offense does. So I think there's going to be a market for Marcus Smart because now you don't have to worry about trying to put together or find some $8 million player to match with this guy who's getting it. You know, that's why you give Marcus Smart that $20 million, or it's like 18 and a half, to go into last year, because if things don't necessarily work out, you know that you have at least a defensive piece that's going to be very valuable, possibly to an entire conference. And so with Rob Williams having to, you know, check Embiid, check Giannis, check Durant when, you know, with that size, there's where your real defensive presence is going to be needed moving forward.
I would trade him. I would trade him for Lonzo Ball. The money works. You get a 6'6" guy. He's not a liability on defense. I think he sees the floor better. I think he could limit. He could settle down the offense, and I think he can still hit some shots. I'd hate to lose Smart, but if you could look, what he gave you wasn't enough, and the turnovers ruined you. You've got to address that. Like the Patriots have to address a wide receiver and getting people for Mac Jones to throw to.
Right.
The Celtics have to address the turnovers. They have to.
Yeah, but it's just very hard to sell me on Lonzo Ball, you know, where you're talking about, you know, 42% from three, 42% from three. So there's some evenness there, you know. you know he's going to be asked to take more than, you know, 5, 6, 7 shots in a game. You know, he's taking 7 threes a game, you know, so, and hitting 42%. Yeah, maybe. The assist numbers are coming down. I don't know.
What do you think the Celtics have to do?
Should they get
a veteran point guard that's able to take care of the ball and settle things? Like, Rondo would have been perfect before he lost his mind, you know?
But you'd need more scoring. You need someone who's going to provide scoring, because you're going to have to need someone to accentuate what the bench isn't providing.
Sure.
They need bench scoring as well. So they need a point guard who can provide you some points, not all the points, be a third option. And they need someone who can come off the bench that can give you 7 to 10 a game.
But the good news, KJ, is Brad Stevens has proven, it's a small sample size, but he's proven capable of finding those types of pieces. Derek White, Al Horford coming back. So, like, I have confidence that he'll be able to identify that scorer you're talking about, or the point guard that takes care of the ball and can limit turnovers. I don't know if Tatum leaves and they need to hit on a big name in the draft, some of the stuff Danny Ainge did, I don't know if he can do that. But hopefully we don't have to worry about that for a long time.
Yeah, well, I think the Celtics have bought themselves some time, including Tatum, right? Because when you make it this far into the finals, there are going to be other players in the league who say, you know what, I want to play with those two guys, right? That's the whole thing about advancing, because you saw what the Mavs did. The Mavs went and got Christian Wood, which is a brilliant move, because their big problem was, like, they have no physical interior presence that can score. So now they go get a long that can score that, you know, look, that pairs well. So they're making moves already. So it's the same thing with the Celtics. It's just that their chapter has ended the most recent, right? And so there's someone who's saying, hey, look, I'm probably that guy that can distribute to these guys and still get buckets for them. And just one guy off of the bench that can provide some steady leadership and some points. Because I think that's the other part as well, is when the bench comes in, who is the leader out there? They sometimes seem to be lost and are just automatically looking to defer to whichever Brown or Tatum is out there, right? And so...
They need Jason Tatum to grow. They need him to grow. He will. I mean, he'll get there. I mean, look, when you look at the guys that won championships when they were young, okay, Dwayne Wade, young Kobe, young Kawhi Leonard, who was like 23, all of them had a Hall of Famer at their head.
On the team, yeah.
Hall of Famer. And even Devin Booker last year, who went to the finals, they didn't win it, but he went to the finals, and Chris Paul was by his side. Then you look at some of the other guys that won. Steph Curry, 27 years old. I think when they won their first championship, he was in like his seventh year. LeBron James was 26 in his 8th season or something when they won their first title, when he won his first. It takes time. Tatum's 24. He'll get there. He might make us crazy as we wait and we watch him and his career progression and trajectory kind of unfold, but he'll get there. It's just a matter of when and who's around him, and can they expedite the process a little bit.
Yeah, it's just tough. It's just tough in this current era where things are moving faster. Like, even in baseball, managers are getting fired faster because, you know, granted, and it's a good thing that the Celtics are not the Kings, or they're not Oklahoma City, where, you know, they have to listen to the noise and are forced to make moves. And, you know, I don't foresee any crazy foreseen move that they're going to make to say, what are they doing? Unless it's demanded, right, by a player, which could be the case, which I was talking about last hour. So you're a solid franchise. You dictate the conversation, not the audience, where you're starting to see it in other sports with some teams where, hey, if the minority loud voices are loud enough, some people get forced into making these moves. And it tends to be where you have a younger GM who's listening to social and is getting bombarded with talk and television and so forth. And sometimes you have to bear that out. I hate to say that, because that's what we're doing.
Last point. Just to your point about, like, Tatum, and is he going to stay, and is he going to get angry and leave, whatever. That's been really what's derailed these teams with these young guys that have made the finals, and they've never gotten back. Witness the Oklahoma City Thunder in 2012, the Orlando Magic in 95. The problem has been guys left. Shaq left for the Lakers. James Harden was traded. If you can keep the guys together, it bodes really well for you.
Well, Shaq did win another one when he went to Miami, when he left the Lakers.
No, but he left Orlando, though. That's why they didn't get back to the finals after they went 95. So that's why, because they were young. They should have been back, but he left. And James Harden left. So that big three in OKC after 2012, they couldn't get back. He was gone. You've got to keep the team together if you want a chance after going once when you were young, going back and continuing to go back. You've got to keep them together. That's been the X factor.
Good Sunday to you. Happy Father's Day to you. It's KJ and Don Darrow here on WEEI. We wrap things up next.
You're listening to KJ and Don Darrow on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
KJ and Don Darrow, WEEI, thank you so much for spending your Father's Day and Sunday with us. Mark's been live from the U.S. Open. I don't think he's going to go home today, but that's okay. Happy Father's Day to you. So, Mark, I want to put this in front of you really quick. The best father-son sports duo to you in history. Any sport.
Ken Griffey Jr., Ken Griffey Sr. Those are my guys. That was it. That's it.
Nope. Bobby Bonds, Barry Bonds.
No. Hey, look, we're not going to get into that debate. We can have this debate on the phone later. I'm not getting into that now.
I'll go Barrett on you real quick. Win over replacement war.
Oh, I don't want to hear
57.
Good. Whatever. Listen, we are joined right now by Steve Pellegrino. He's the vice chair of the 2022 U.S. Open. He's also a member here at the Country Club. Steve, great to see you. This course is getting rave reviews, and everybody I've talked to has loved the experience being here at the Country Club. From somebody that's a member, from somebody that was intimately involved in the preparations for this tournament, what's your take on how it's unfolded to this point on the precipice of the final round and the leaders teeing off?
Well, we're thrilled with the whole way it's turned out. I couldn't ask for a better leaderboard. I think we've got, five former major champions who are in contention, two former U.S. Open champions. It's looking pretty good. Some really interesting names, and the course has really been playing just how we wanted it to. We couldn't be more proud of how it's looking, how it's playing, and it's going to be a really exciting day.
Awesome day. Like you said, the leaderboard is stacked. People are excited. Let me ask you this. Is there anything in terms of behind-the-scenes stories, anything cool you can tell us, people that are here, celebrities that have come out, anything from that perspective, people enjoying this U.S. Open that you can think of?
No, the most interesting thing for me, because I'm a golf geek, is seeing Gil Hanse on property here. And Gil's a good friend of mine, and I've known him for a bunch of years and worked with him both here at the Country Club and at another club I'm involved with. And he's just such a nice guy. It's cool to see him on property and driving around, and he's a bit of a celebrity in the golf world, if you're into golf course architecture. So driving him around campus a little bit, you get little hoots and hollers like, "Hey, Gil, what's going on? Great job," that sort of thing.
Okay.
That's kind of it.
So in terms of, because I'll be honest with you, I'm rooting for, obviously I'm not a member here, but this is my hometown, the U.S. Open professional
this
golf.
This is when you ask for a membership.
Yeah, we're not there yet. We can
Please.
There's other things standing in my way, let's just say that. But
your golf game is plenty good enough. I saw you, we played a month ago, and I think it's plenty good.
And it's been better. The big question is David here? That's what I want to know. We can talk about that after.
Is he here?
I got to find. Okay.
See,
we'll go
how
find
the universe works on your behalf, man.
This guy, I got to tell you about this guy later, KJ. This is awesome. But anyway, I'm rooting for, this is just me, I want a big name to win the tournament, because I think that would enhance the experience of a fan from here who's watching the U.S. Open play out in his hometown. Is there anything like that you're rooting for? A big name, drama, playoff holds, like anything like that you want to see happen?
No. I mean, what we wanted really was the golf course to play the way it's playing, which is great. And really, because of that, you wind up seeing a leaderboard that's just so strong. It's hard to look at that list and not think to yourself, gosh, I'd be happy to have any one of a handful of those guys win and have their names, yes, on the trophy, but up on our wall in the locker building where we have all former USGA champions listed. There are a lot of good names up there that would look great in gold leaf on that plaque for a long time to come.
We're joined now by Steve Pellegrino, the vice chair of the 2022 U.S. Open and also a member here at the Country Club. I saw you ripped up this course. You've done this a million times with your golf game. Listen, again, is there any way, rave reviews, people talking about even as much as this course should be in the regular U.S. Open rotation, is there any way that we could get it back here in the foreseeable future, or is that something that you just can't speak to right now?
Yeah, we're just focusing on today. Certainly the reviews that we've gotten from from the USGA and from the players bode well. The thing you really want to make sure is that both of those constituencies are satisfied, and the USGA gets satisfied when the players find it to be a tough, real test for our national championship, but fair. And I think we've achieved that, and that's the best we could hope for. Conversations that go on in the future will be conversations that go on in the future, but we're sort of reveling in what's going on right now.
Sure, I was saying to KJ earlier, -4, the leaders, right? Like, that's exactly where you'd want them to be for a U.S. Open. You know, it just feels perfect, the conditions. We've gotten good weather for the most part. They've had to deal with some wind. Well, yeah. So what? Deal with it. It's the U.S. Open, so they've got some teeth. And I'd love to see it. It's made for good theater. In terms of, I guess I'll just ask you this, after the fact, after the tournament, what happens for a person like you who's so involved in the preparation? Are we talking about some wild parties to celebrate what went on and how successful the event was, and you get back on the course eventually? How does that work?
The first thing that goes on is sleep. I've been spent a lot of early mornings for the last 2 weeks. Wake the early bell, wake going off at 3-4 a.m. every morning, and staying up fairly late. So after the sleep, then we get to work on putting this campus back together. The USGA has been phenomenal partners in the lead up to setting all of this championship up. They've been great partners, super collaborative, great to deal with, and by all accounts, they're going to be great as we put it back together, and getting the members back out here to play at some point, before too long. But looking forward to getting it back to sort of some semblance of normalcy. But I got to tell you, I look around over the last few days with all the spectators out here. We have upwards of 35,000 people on campus when you include, not just spectators, but volunteers and staff members and things like that. And my overall feeling when I look around on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I was walking, and it just struck me as like, this is right. This is what we should be doing, and this is what this campus should be looking like. And it's phenomenal to see so many spectators out and people who are working here,
sure,
out here and just really enjoying themselves. The vibe. I've been to a lot of U.S. Opens in preparation for this. I've been involved for 8-plus years and been to a lot of U.S. Opens in that time frame. And the vibe I'm feeling here, it's just hits a little different.
Awesome. Well, congrats, Steve, on the success in this tournament and everything that's gone on. I hope it's a great final day. We're all going to be watching and excited to see how it plays out. Steve Pellegrino, the vice chair of the 2022 U.S. Open and a member here at the Country Club, joining us on KJ and Don Darrow. Steve, thanks very much. Great to see you.
Happy to have fun today.
Good all right.
See you again.
Thanks, Steve. There goes Steve.
Yeah, Mark, actually a good friend of mine from childhood is actually part of player support for performance and recovery team. I'm looking at her USGA badge.
There you go.
Open. Yeah, so I'm not
buckle up, strap in. It's going to be a great day.
Yeah, so thank you so much for joining KJ and Don Darrow. Best of Father's Day to you.
Happy Father's Day.
If you're just getting off of the course now and going home, go play another round. It's your day, right? So thank you again. Mark, enjoy your time at the U.S. Open. Happy Father's Day to you as well. Thank you for listening to WEEI. Remember, Red Sox again later this afternoon here on WEEI. Have a great Sunday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.